You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Maria McKinley.
And I'm Doug Storm. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, July 7th, 2017.
Because a normal one route, you would start probably around 6:30, between 6:30 and 7. And
last Wednesday, Muncie Community Schools opened for the school year. They then canceled the rest of the week due to school bus difficulties. Muncie Community Schools hired Michigan-based Auxilio Services to offer.
Changes in school bus contracts could lead to headaches as Monroe County Community Schools open on Wednesday. More on that in today's Community Report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Fred Parker's commitment to the solid presence of jazz music in the Bloomington community. That's on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, these local headlines.
Blue-green algae was found in one of Lake Lemon's overflow ponds. According to a notice from the Lake Lemon Conservancy District office on Thursday, the toxic algae is located on the east end of the lake, south of the Long Causeway, near the Monroe and Brown County line. Sarah Powers of the IU Clean Lakes program discovered the blue-green algae. Powers said it is present because the pond isn't connected to the Lake Lemon and has nothing to disturb it. According to the notice, people and pets should stay away from the pond. Blue-green algae produces toxins that can be potentially fatal to people, dogs, and other animals. Lake Lemon Conservation District Manager Adam Casey said the algae should only last for a few weeks. Casey said the algae-affected pond's water cannot mix with the main lake itself. More information on blue-green algae and the monitoring of Indiana lakes can be found at the Indiana Department of Environmental Management.
The Department of Natural Resources is asking bow hunters to keep track of any animals they spot. The DNR says they're asking bow hunters to count the number of wildlife they see while hunting. Data obtained through the project, called Archer's Index, will help DNR officials make informed decisions on how to better maintain Indiana's wildlife. By analyzing animal population data, the DNR can determine what types of animals are open for hunting. Volunteers will be asked to fill out a count sheet and keep track of their time spent hunting. In a press release issued Thursday, the DNR said over 15 different animal species were recorded by past Archer Index volunteers. Among the recent changes in area wildlife is an increase of bobcat sightings and a decrease of red and gray fox populations. Volunteers may contact the DNR at dfw@dnr.in.gov.
A new Indiana state law requires school employees to report suspected child abuse or neglect directly to child services or local law enforcement before informing the principal of the school. State Senator Mark Mesmer, a co-author of the legislation, said in a statement that the new law was made because some child abuse cases were not being reported. Lisa Tansel, general counsel at Indiana School Boards Association, said the new law is different when it comes to reporting child abuse cases.
Operate its bus routes.
Prior to the change in the law, teachers, of course, were required to notify the principal of any alleged cases of child abuse, and then the principal had the duty to make the report. Teachers, of course, had to make the report only if they believed the principal wasn't going to make the report. So most corporations, you know, developed policies based on that version of the law. But as you know, July 1st, the law changed and now requires teachers to directly make the report. So as opposed to going to the principal first, it's now the teacher has the duty to make the report to either Department of Child Services or to law enforcement officials.
Andrew Clampett, Public Relations and Information Officer at Monroe County Community School Corporation, stressed that the new law does not put additional responsibilities on the person reporting the abuse.
But, I mean, it's just, again, it's just a slight change in who they're reporting to. They're still reporting the same things. That's just different on who they're actually reporting it to. But they've all been made aware of that contact information, and I imagine in the event of those situations, they'll do what they're not required to do.
Teresa Meredith, president of Indiana State Teachers Association, gave a word of caution to school employees reporting incidents to child services.
They have to use some level of discretion. So, for example, you know, when you've got a 7-year-old talking about a spat with a sibling, it can sometimes be hard to know if it's serious or not. But you have to just anything that seems to rise above, seems to raise concern at all. If you have a thought of, I wonder if this is a problem, you know, act on that. Make that call. Let child services decide, well, no, that's really not enough to investigate, but thank you for the call. Or, yes, you know, that sounds serious. We're going to take a look and see what we can find out. Let child services decide if it's minor or not.
Meredith also pointed out concerns teachers have had with a new bill.
Wanting to make sure their school corporation policies get changed, because many corporations' policies right now say first you must report it to an administrator and wait with the administrator, and the administrator will make the call. Or report it to your administrator and then follow back up the next day to make sure your administrator acted on it. That's not okay with this new law.
Tansel said the new law brings with it changes in responsibilities for teachers.
Well, at the end of the day, it's really tough to make that call. It's a gut-wrenching feeling when you make that call, but at the end of the day, it's about protecting that child, and sometimes it hurts some feelings of people. You know, and it's a confidential reporting as well, so the family doesn't know who reported, but at the end of the day, it is about keeping that child safe, and that is part of our responsibility as educators.
Meredith said that the new bill is important in keeping school children safe.
Well, at the end of the day, it's really tough to make that call. It's a gut-wrenching feeling when you make that call, but at the end of the day, it's about protecting that child, and sometimes it hurts some feelings of people. You know, and it's a confidential reporting as well, so the family doesn't know who reported, but at the end of the day, it is about keeping that child safe, and that is part of our responsibility as educators.
The new law also requires age-appropriate education about child abuse and child sexual abuse to be provided at public, charter, and accredited non-public schools for K through 12th grades.
The state of Indiana is warning citizens about a recent scam involving unclaimed property, which could come in the form of emails and phone calls asking for payment. According to a press release from the Attorney General's office on August 4th, moving or having a name change could cause property such as payroll, estates, death benefits, savings, or even more to go unclaimed. According to the Attorney General's office, the state collects unclaimed property until Hoosiers are able to prove their identity. Currently, the state estimates it maintains $466 million in unclaimed property. The state of Indiana wants citizens to know that unclaimed property can be accessed for free through IndianaUnclaimed.gov and is asking Hoosiers to report scams that ask for payment up front. A representative of the Indiana Attorney General's office will be at the state fairgrounds to help assist fairgoers who wish to see if they have unclaimed assets. For WFHB, I'm Maria McKinley.
And I'm Doug Storm. Wednesday's opening of the school year brings with it anxiety over Muncie's school openings. As WFHB News Director Wes Martin explains, school busing is at the heart of the issue.
Last Wednesday, Muncie Community Schools opened for the school year. They then canceled the rest of the week due to school bus difficulties. Muncie Community Schools hired Michigan-based Auxilio Services to operate its bus routes. A shortage of drivers, confusion over school bus routes, and missed pickups and drop-offs led Muncie schools to close on Thursday and Friday after Superintendent Steve Ball called the situation unsafe. On Wednesday, Monroe County School Corporation opens for the school year, and over 40 bus routes will be operated by Auxilio Services. Despite last week's troubles in Muncie, MCCSC spokesman Andrew Clampett told WFHB earlier today that he believes MCCSC's school transportation is ready for Wednesday.
For years, we have contracted bus routes through private contractors. We've always had that relationship with contract drivers, and so this year is no different in terms of how kind of that relationship between our transportation department and contract drivers. The only difference this year is that Auxilio is a new contractor for us, but like I said, we've been working very closely with them all summer, and come the first day of school, we'll very safely and efficiently transport all of our students to and from school. And so I can't speak to the specifics of what happened in Muncie, as we're MCCSC, and we're ready for the first day of school. Like I said, we've been working very closely with Auxilio all summer, so I can't speak to the nature of Muncie's dealings with them. I would just tell, you know, concerned parents that, you know, this is not new for us in working with contractors. We've done this for years. This year will look no different. We'll have all of our students transported safely, and, you know, we're excited for the school year to start, and we're ready for it.
But 41-year veteran bus driver Mickey Duncan says from what she's gathered from other drivers, Auxilio doesn't have enough drivers for their routes. Duncan said that would mean Auxilio would have to hire substitute drivers from the school corporation, meaning some drivers will end up driving multiple routes.
Because a normal one route, you would start probably around 6:30, between 6:30 and 7, and the drop-off at South High School is 7:30, and then there's about 10 minutes maybe in between your route for elementary, and you have just enough time to get those kids to your elementary route. So if you have a double route, there's no way they can run that in 30 to 45 minutes and get two high school routes picked up and have them to school on time. Same for little kids. My understanding is they had 43 routes, and I think as of today they might have 20 drivers, but they are not all licensed drivers yet. My understanding is there might be 10 that have their license to drive, and the school corporation is planning on doubling up on their routes to cover what Auxilio can't. So you would know that the students wouldn't get to school on time, or they would not get home on time. There's no way you can run two routes and get students home by 4:30. So the students will probably be getting home late, and they will not be getting to school on time.
Duncan also told WFHB in an interview this afternoon, many buses are not equipped with radios, two stop sign arms, cameras, or GPS systems.
Well, we bid in December, and Auxilio came down and also bid 43 routes and underbid us, but we were not, actually, I don't think we were given a chance to negotiate or anything. They just give them the routes and what they bid. We knew they wouldn't be able to buy buses and buy the equipment for the buses and the insurance and the workman's comp for what they bid. So we knew that this wouldn't work. It would probably fail. My bid was a little higher than it was when I bid 8 years ago because I had to have a newer bus. Insurance was higher, and fuel is a little bit higher than it was then. Auxilio bid less than I had bid 8 years ago. So by looking at that, you can tell that if you bid $200-some a day compared to what I bid, there is no way that they could buy a bus and pay their insurance and pay their workman's comp. And we also had to purchase new radios, which was $600 to $700 a piece. And my understanding is they have none of this equipment on their bus as of Saturday. They have no cameras, no GPSs, no radios, no two-way radios. And they have only one stop arm on their buses, and we were supposed to have two according to our specs. So I don't think they're even fulfilling the specs that they bid on.
How do you know that information?
Because I had Auxilio call me Saturday evening about 7 o'clock and wanted to know if I was interested in buying my, they wanted to buy my radio. And I knew they had called all the other drivers looking for radios.
And it was a procurement officer from Auxilio?
Yes, it was. His name was Matt.
For WFHB, I'm Wes Martin.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Support also comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Hi, my name is Fred Parker, and I volunteer with B-Town Jazz, used to be Jazz from Bloomington. I think with B-Town Jazz, the thing that got me interested was the education part of it, in particular the jam sessions, and seeing my kids enjoy that, and it was a way for me to be a part of helping my kids do something they like doing. I was not really a... didn't follow jazz that closely until my kids started getting involved with it. And they wanted to go to the jam sessions, and I started taking them, and I started appreciating what I'd been missing. I was involved with, you know, as my kids were growing up, they wanted to be in Cub Scouts. So I ended up being Cub Master for a while. So I have done some other volunteering too, but for about the past 7-8 years, it's been mainly B-Town Jazz. It's because of Monica Herzig that I got involved. She was actually putting together the jam sessions that my oldest son Chris wanted to go to. I'm an engineer by trade. My initial involvement was I actually came in as president of B-Town Jazz. And so it was trying to get a better idea of what B-Town Jazz was, where we wanted to go with things. And there again, the education was something I had a big interest in, and we really were focusing a lot on the jam sessions. I was president for about 8 years. Now there's got a board of directors in place that they're running the things, and I'm more on an advisory position. Still very much involved. I've got two boys, 15 and 19, Jeffrey and Chris. And they're playing jazz. Matter of fact, they're both up on stage today. So it's very neat for me to be involved now and see them involved in something like this. I feel very much at home here at Players Pub. Joe Esville, he's fantastic. And I know if we need something, you know, he'll be here to help out. I like seeing kids realize at a young age that they are creative. And, you know, I see him get up on stage in front of an audience, and it's just something I didn't really get to experience as far as learning that I was creative even until later in life, and here these kids are getting the opportunity early. I think as far as the main drive for the volunteering, that's been it for me. If you're wanting to volunteer and have some fun, get involved with B-Town Jazz. It's a great group of people. You get to... Just like the group playing back there in the background now. You get to hear great music. You know, it's a fun organization to be involved with. Thanks for listening. I'm Fred Parker with B-Town Jazz.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Support for WFHB comes from Bloomington Pride, presenting Pride Fest on August 26th in downtown Bloomington. The festival celebrates LGBTQ community and culture and features a Pride rally, education workshops, live performances, family activities, and local vendors. Details are on Facebook and at bloomingtonpride.org/PrideFest.
Today's headlines were written by Cole Stinson, Arjun Balasandram, and Alex Davis. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin. Activate is produced by Lucy Shake from the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Michael Glab. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Maria McKinley. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming, online at WFHB.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news at WFHB.org.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Stay tuned for KiteLine, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system. Coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.